Welcome to this podcast of sermons from University Christian Church, Disciples of Christ in Fort Worth, Texas. UCC is a community of faith where all are welcome, where we worship in a spirit of togetherness, where we embrace curiosity, community, and compassion. We don't claim to have all the answers, nor do we expect you to check your brain at the door, but rather we gather together to find the courage to engage the scriptures and to ask the big questions about who we are as people of faith, and who God is calling us to be. At UCC, we seek the sacred, commit to love, and empower to serve. And in so doing, we work together to transform the world through Christ's courageous love. My name is Reverend Dr. Russ Peterman, and I'm the senior minister here at UCC, and so most of these sermons are from me.
Take care, Jesus said. Take care and be on your guard against all kinds of greed, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions, Jesus said. I don't know about you, but all too often it feels like Jesus is talking directly to me. And this is one of those times. And yet I suspect that I'm not alone. In fact, perhaps the most profound, important question of our time is, how much is enough? How much is enough? You've all probably seen the saying, it's on bumper stickers and t-shirts, the one who dies with the most toys wins. We laugh, but sadly that has become in many ways the mantra of America in our day. This isn't a new problem. In fact, the wise teacher of Ecclesiastes once says, the eye never has enough of seeing, nor its ear of hearing. We have insatiable appetites, which makes things difficult because we live in a culture in which more is king, where bigger is always better. We spend an inordinate amount of time and energy trying to get more of what we already have enough of. In fact, there was a study that was done at UCLA in 2012, and it studied American families that were overwhelmed by clutter. And what they discovered is that 3 out of 4 garages in our homes are too full with other stuff that we can't park our cars in our garage. 3 out of 4 garages. I said that at the 9 o'clock service, and I can't tell you how many nudges I saw. Head turns. You see, here's the thing. I would argue that we are all against materialism, aren't we? In fact, in a recent study, 89% of Americans who were polled said that the United States is too materialistic. But by sheer coincidence, almost exactly the same percentage of us said that we wanted more for ourselves. I don't think we want to be materialistic. We just want more stuff. And so we spend so much time and energy trying to get the things that we want, thinking, hoping, maybe even praying that they will make us happy, that they will give us some sort of prestige, they will give us some sort of power. It was Dave Ramsey, the great financial guru, who pointed out that we buy things we don't need with money we don't have to impress people that we don't even like. Now, scientists will say that we tend to buy things for emotional reasons as much as anything else. In fact, research shows that when we shop, when we buy things, that dopamine is released into our bodies, into our brains. And so many of us find ourselves shopping as some sort of a form of retail therapy to sort of manage stress and to find a level of comfort. I heard a woman not too long ago said, I go to the mall on Friday nights hoping to relax by shopping. But within 5 minutes of setting the bags down at home, I often feel empty again. And now I have to find space to shove all of the stuff I just bought into my drawers and closets. David Myers wrote a book called The American Paradox, Spiritual Hunger in an Age of Plenty. A fascinating book. I recommend it highly. The bottom line, he says, is that the doubling of affluence in the last 40 years has not contributed to the level of happiness in the average American even one bit. In fact, he says, as affluence has been on the rise, happiness has been on decline. And part of that is because it becomes addictive, that we find that we are not filled with our possessions, and so we want more. It's this vicious cycle. In fact, 40 years ago, psychologists articulated this concept known as the hedonic treadmill. It refers to the fact that we quickly adapt to and take for granted the things that we get in our lives. That when we acquire something that we want, we feel a little bit of gratification in that moment. Maybe it's that dopamine that's released into our brains. Now, before we have that thing, we have this sense of lack. And sometimes it's deep within us, and we think that getting whatever it may be will make that sense of lack go away. And it does. It does. It goes away for a very short while, and then we adapt to it, and then we're back on that treadmill once again. And that sense of lack becomes the next thing that we want or need. Now, I don't think, though, that we have a shopping problem. I think it's much bigger than that. I think what we define as a cultural problem may actually be a spiritual problem. In fact, Psalm 106 talks about the faithlessness of the Israelites, and the psalmist suggests that God sees the ways in which they have been ungrateful for the things that God has given, all the ways that God has done for them. And the punishment for their faithlessness, for their lack of gratitude, the punishment, it says, God gave them exactly what they asked for. That was the punishment. God gave them exactly what they asked for, but along with it, they got an empty heart. Another translation says, God gave them what they asked, but sent a wasting disease among them. Now, what is this disease? What is this emptiness of heart? There was a series on PBS a number of years ago. It later became a best-selling book. The book was entitled Affluenza. It describes an illness, and the symptoms are a constant need for more, bigger, and better stuff, as well as the effect that this has on people. They describe it as a painful, contagious, socially transmitted disease of overload of debt, anxiety, and waste, resulting from the dogged pursuit of more, of trying to keep up with the Joneses. Now, I would argue that most of us have been affected with this virus to some degree. In fact, Mark Scandaret, a Presbyterian minister, says that we live in one of the wealthiest economies on earth, yet many of us feel crunched for time, stressed in our finances, or perplexed about what makes for a meaningful life. Our culture is driven by a sense of scarcity, fear, and an unquenchable quest for more. The scripts that we've inherited about material prosperity are wearing us out, robbing us of our joy, and destroying our planet. Madeline Levine wrote a book called The Price of Privilege. She's a psychologist, and she worked for a number of years, but discovered recently this new breed of unhappy teenager, as opposed to the previous breed of unhappy teenagers. When this bright, personable 15-year-old girl from a financially comfortable family came to her office, and Madeline discovered that she had written the word empty. She had cut the word empty into her arm. This led to some conversations with educators and clinicians, and further research all confirmed that something is really wrong. And so she began doing studies on privileged adolescents. And what she discovered is that privileged adolescents are experiencing epidemic rates of depression, of anxiety disorders, and substance abuses, rates that are significantly higher than any other socioeconomic group in this country. And she points to this perfect storm of materialism, of pressure to succeed, of perfectionism, and ultimately a disconnection that is sometimes influenced, if not exaggerated, by social media. got me wondering if maybe this was the disease that the psalmist is talking about, this emptiness, that maybe emptiness of the heart is the dis-ease of our generation. That somehow we have convinced ourselves that life will be better, that life will be more secure if we can just fill our empty hearts with stuff. In a lot of ways, that's what happened to the farmer in the parable we just heard. He starts out with all of the advantages of society. He was among the tiny percentage of folks who owned land at that time. He has this huge harvest, and he has to tear down his barns in order to build newer ones, bigger ones. He was one of those people, I guess, that couldn't park his car in the garage because he had too much stuff. Now, it's important for us to recognize that Luke's original audience would have been familiar with a similar story. They would have been familiar with the story of Joseph in Genesis, who also built new barns to hold the abundance of his harvests. But his were during the fat years in Egypt, so that the people, including his family, the ones that they had tried to kill him, would have enough to eat in the lean years that he sensed were coming. But the difference in these stories, the difference in these stories is that Joseph wasn't plotting for his own profit. He wasn't motivated by his greed, whereas the rich fool in the story thought only of himself. In fact, if we go back and read and listen again to the text that Eldon shared, 11 times he uses the first person, either I, me, or my. Not once does he speak about ours or theirs. This man's wealth has caused him to turn inward on himself. He thinks he has become self-sufficient. Now, all of this takes place in a larger context of the section of Luke's gospel in which Jesus is addressing this sense of value, of our value, and he's telling us that we are all precious in God's sight, and so we shouldn't worry so much about stuff or believe that a storehouse of treasures constitutes real wealth. Now, I want to be very clear here, because it's tempting for us to think that Jesus is just down on material things, that Jesus is just down on wealth. I think it's deeper than that. It's more nuanced than that. I think what he's saying, what he's doing, is he's giving us a warning, because he knows how seductive material possessions are, how we are inclined to be possessed by our possessions. And he's trying to warn us about the way things can take over our lives. They can even become our lives if we're not careful, if we don't watch out. He's warning us so that we don't get to the end of our lives and look back and realize that we've spent the one and only life we've been entrusted focusing on the things that ultimately don't matter, things that never brought us the satisfaction that we always hoped that they would. In my role as a pastor, I have had the sacred privilege of being with people in their final moments, sitting beside someone coming to the realization that this may be their last breath. And let me tell you, in all of the times that that has happened, not once have I ever heard a person say, never asked me, you know, would you take my really nice car and just drive it around and park it right outside the window of my hospital room so that I could admire it one more time? Nobody has ever said, Russ, will you just go down to the bank and get some of my money and just come lay it here on my chest because I want to hold it near my heart as I draw my last breath. That has never happened. What they do talk about is whether they are right with their families and whether they are right with God. 100% of the time, that's the conversation that we have. So what we need then is a different posture towards wealth and possessions, to recognize that we can't measure our value, that we can't measure our security in accumulated goods. You know, I'd never thought of it before this week, but what an offensive concept it is to speak about a human being's net worth measured in dollars and cents and stuff. Have you ever thought about that? That our net worth is measured by what we have, what we own? Jesus talks not about our net worth, but ultimately over and over again about our infinite value in God's eyes. You see, he's trying to teach us to keep wealth and keep possessions in their proper place. He's trying to remind us that our lives have significant value and worth, not in what we accumulate, but in the light of God's love for us, which is more than any of us can measure. A colleague of mine tells a story of riding in a bus in Guatemala. Not exactly a real affluent type of place. It was one of those buses that was crammed with people and chickens. And in the midst of that, on this mission trip with her church family, she sensed this call to ministry. And so on that bumpy ride in the bus, she turned to her pastor and said that she was thinking about this, that she sensed that God was calling her. And so she asked him, "Is there anything I need to read? Maybe is there something that I should do in order to prepare me for ministry?" And she pulled out her notebook and she was ready to write down all the things that he was about to tell her, all the list of books that she needed to buy, the top 10 things that she needed to do. Instead, he simply leaned over and closed her book for her and simply said, "Someone once told me this. It's the most important thing they ever gave me, and so now I'll give it to you. And that is simply the knowledge that you are enough. That you are enough." Church, my hope for you, my prayer for you, is that you will hear that promise. That you will know deep in the emptiness of your heart that you are enough.
So thanks for listening. I do hope and pray that you found this sermon to be engaging and thoughtful and inspiring and maybe even a little challenging. I also hope that if you get the chance to join us on Sunday mornings in our sanctuary, you will. I think you'll find the welcome warm and inviting, the music inspiring, and there will always be a place at the table for you, regardless of who you are or where you come from or where you are on your spiritual journey. Just know that you're welcome here. And if you'd like to support the production of this podcast and the ongoing mission and ministry of UCC, or to simply find out more about this community of faith, we invite you to go to universitychristian.org. Grace and peace to you.